views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Recently, I had Dr. Deborah Lind. She's done some shows with me, but I had her come into my classroom and talk to students at the business school, Carlson Business School, that I teach at. It's a leadership and management class that I was teaching, and I wanted her to come in at the end of the semester and talk to them about stress and mindfulness and just help them through at the end of the semester. It seemed like it was pretty timely. What I didn't realize at the time was how much the students would react to this talk. I knew she was good, and that wasn't a question, but I didn't realize how much students were actually struggling with stress. And when she came and the overwhelming response afterwards and the people talking and when we had the end of semester review from the students, they just poured over how great it was that they could talk about stress. It was a topic that affected all the students. It wasn't just one type of student, a female or somebody of a certain age. It was all backgrounds, everyone. I knew that stress amongst millennials was higher than it had been for other generations, but I didn't realize until I actually got to experience this how much it was affecting our youth. So I started doing some more digging, and I found a study conducted at Carnegie Mellon that shows that stress levels have increased in upwards of 30% over the last three decades. It's the highest amongst millennials. I don't know if it's going to go down as they get older, maybe as they take drugs and learn how to deal with stress. Maybe the stress levels will go down, but they're starting at a significantly higher level than our generation did and the generations previously. And of course, stress is kind of bad news because, according to Mayo Clinic and almost everyone out there, stress is related to a whole host of health conditions, including high blood pressure and heart disease, obesity, diabetes, a whole bunch of stuff. But it's also a leading indicator for psychological health problems such as anxiety and depression, and probably a leading indicator for all the other physical diseases that I just mentioned. So the question is, long-term, how is this going to affect society with our stress levels amongst our youth being so much higher? So what I did is I brought Dr. Deborah Lind back to the program, and I wanted to talk about this. Why is it so high? What can we do? What are the ramifications? She works with a lot of executives in the business world and teaches them how to deal with stress. And so she likes to measure everything, and she approaches all this stuff differently in the sense that she likes to show the actual measurement to business executives of what they get when they turn around their stressful situation from a cost savings to their business, healthier employees, so on and so on. But this was with our youth and with millennials specifically before they reach the business world. So we talked about this quite a bit. So let's welcome Dr. Deborah Lind to the program. Hey, Deborah, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks, Sarah.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're back. I really wanted to talk and really dive into this, the stress and the stuff that you talk about. You came to my class, which was absolutely fabulous, and talked to my students. And I got to tell you that I was amazed, not because you didn't do a great job, because you did do a great job, but I was amazed at how much they responded to you. I had about 75 kids in the class, and I could not believe when you talked about stress, I was thinking that, I don't know. I they're college kids. I wasn't sure how they would respond. literally, I wouldn't be exaggerating. It was the highlight of the semester of them being able to deal with their stress. And when I did the end of the class, they do, you know, they answer questions on what they liked about the class and didn't and whatever. I would say a good third of them brought up the stress stuff, and boys too, the male students as well. And I was surprised at how important it was for them to deal with their stress, and the comments that some of these kids came up to about how stressed out their fellow students are, how stressed out they are. And I was just shocked by it, really. And are we seeing this huge of an increase all over the country on college campuses and at work?
You know, we are. You know, one of the things that was really, I would say profound, but it really stood out, especially with, you know, meeting with the class, was when we went around and we asked people, you know, how do they handle stress? And to hear the stories, you know, about stuff that they're doing and how it's not helping. It's not making anything better. It's what they go to. It's what they've learned. It's what they've seen. It's what they see their parents doing, their other friends doing. It's what they've read. And yet what's interesting is even though, you know, that group of folks are, you know, undergraduate students, as older adults, you know, we're doing the same stuff. And what's interesting is I was doing some research, because I get asked this question a lot of, you know, have things always been this bad? You know, and why has it gotten worse? At least the perception is like it's gotten worse, right? And what's
I got to tell you, and I don't want to cut you off because I want you to say what you're going to say, but I just am not expecting college kids yet to feel that level of stress, because they don't have the level of responsibility that adults do, you know, running an organization, you know, having to provide for a family, pay a mortgage, all that stuff. Their only responsibility, really, you know, the older ones are a different thing, but it's themselves and getting good grades. You know what I mean? But keep going.
So one of the things that's a challenge and that we typically do is, you know, the phrase, you know, there's a phrase out there is someone always has it worse. What's wrong with that phrase is that it invalidates someone else's perceived reality. So while these kids, whether we're talking about, you know, kindergartners, or we're talking about fifth graders, or we're talking about high school students, or we're talking about college students, yes, their world is different than an adult that has, say, like a single mom, right? Has to take care of kids, has to pay mortgage, has to maybe, you know, have more than one job. It's different, but it's not any worse or better than that person.
Well, so, but it was real. I mean, I watched these kids. This is real to them. And that's the thing. And it's very real and it's physical. And one of the students came up to me and she was saying that they've done studies that the stress level of today's students is the same level that back in the, I think, 80s, you'll be able to know this stat, that psychiatric patients had.
Yeah, there's, you know, what's interesting is that there's so much statistical information. There's even stats to invalidate stats.
Well, so
depending
they maybe
on what study.
Yeah, maybe that's not true. I don't know.
So one of the things that I do look at is that, you know, we do have a reality right now that 1 in 4 college kids, you know, seek care for a mental health challenge. 1 in 4, you know, and so while we can look at why is this happening? What are their pressures? What's their real world? For me, what I like to do is all of that information is really helpful, but what's more helpful is giving people tools and techniques to offset that stuff so they can get rid of the stress, so they can move from reacting to responding, so they can change bad habits and make better decisions, so they can arm themselves with knowledge and information, but then also have some stuff that they can use right then and there when they need it, as opposed to doing what they've always done and having the continued problem.
Well, and that's what they were so thankful of. I was shocked at how thankful, and even the male students, I guess I just wasn't expecting that well of a reception. You know, it just was so different when we were in school. And maybe I'm just in La La Land, but they were so thankful of having some tools to deal with their stress. Now, one thing I'm thinking about is, you know, us adults are a lot more stressed than we used to be. And maybe it's reflecting onto our children, because we're so stressed, we're creating a more stressful environment for them. And then they become more stressed.
Yeah, stress is actually what I call an inherited pattern. So if you think about, I'll have a gift, for example. And let's just say sticky fingers. That's a better example, because kids right now, for some reason, are going through a lot of, you know, colds. And I keep saying to, you know, kids, make sure you wash your hands real well. But if I have sticky fingers and then I go touch your hands, your hands are going to be sticky. And then if you go touch somebody else's hands, their hands are going to be sticky. So you're passing on the stickiness, right? It works the same way with anxiety, depression, how we react and respond to stress. As adults, our kids are learning from us. And the other thing that I think that people would be helpful to have an awareness is that kids don't look at mom and dad or aunt and uncle, grandma, grandpa, brother, sister, cousin, and say they're doing it wrong. Kids look at parents and the adult role models and say, they're doing it right. They know and I don't know. So that must be right.
They just assume everything that adults do is the way it is. And it's the right way.
Correct, because they figured it out. Right, because you're an adult and you figured it out.
So yeah, I figured it all out.
right. But I want to say reality. It is their perceived reality, but it doesn't mean that the way that it has been done is the way to address stress, for example. So when these kids are learning from parents and role models how to offset stress, they're actually learning more unfavorable ways than they are learning favorable ways. And I have to say, getting back to a question about male students, when I do my work with male executives, I actually had someone call me, it'll be 2 weeks this Friday. And high level executive, I mean, called me, it was 7:37 at night. You know, I mean, it's like, hello. So it must be, you know, a real, you know, high level need, because usually folks, you know, don't call after hours. But anyway, what he called to share with me was what he learned affects his 5-year-old son. And he said to me specifically, I'm not in the role now of just saying that I'm that person's father. He said, this changed me so much that I'm stepping up to be that 5-year-old dad. And I was like, whoa,
that's cool.
Really?
That's
a great, okay.
That's a great statement.
So moving from, I fathered that child, to, you know what, I'm stepping up, he's 5, and I'm his dad. And that's it. Boom. When the mindset changes, it's amazing. When the mindset makes the decision of, you know what, enough is enough, I'm committed to doing whatever it takes, I don't want any of this anymore, and the plan is made, and then daily incremental action takes place, then these wonderful transformation stories happen. You know, and with this particular person, you know, he even said, he's like, I can't even imagine what my life is going to be like in a month from now, in a year from now. And he said, he thanked me. And I told him, you know, you're my why. I do this for everybody else. That's what my why is. And so I also thought about, too, some of the physical challenges that he was sharing with me when we worked together about what stress does to his body, you know, heartburn, stomach aches, stomach cramping, nausea. And, you know, for a lot of that to already have gone away, you know, he hasn't even been back to his general practitioner for a checkup, but he's telling me the, you know, things that his physical body, how it's responding differently now, which is wonderful.
Yeah, it's amazing how much stress affects you physically. But what ramifications do you think we're seeing overall from just the higher level of stress everywhere? Besides physical levels on, you know, just physically people are not as healthy, but do you think it's affecting other things beyond that?
Oh, absolutely. Our mindset. I mean, when people get stressed out, and in the class too, we talked about the functions of the brain. So when a person is so stressed out, they are unable, their brain is unable to make a sound decision, the best decision. That's why if you hear the phrase, don't send an email when you're mad, wait till you can calm down. It's because what your brain is, you know, calculating and coming up with is not going to be the best decision. It's not going to be the best words. It's not going to be the best message. It has more detrimental effects than it does, you know, constructive positive effects. So we have a few different pockets of, you know, where stress is affecting. It not only affects our physical body, our mind, it affects our energy, it affects our emotions. It's very costly to organizations, I mean, into the billions of dollars. And it's a global epidemic. The one question that I have for folks who are doing the work that I do and other people that are earning doctorates or people who want to even become life coaches is, what are we doing to get things better? How are we helping to get things better? You know, if you notice, and when I was there at the U, someone had asked the question about moving from positive stories to challenges. Remember, she asked specifically, it was something about, you know, these are all great, you know, success stories, but, you know, what about when this doesn't work? You know, and I said that it doesn't work when someone doesn't want to do it. You can't help people who don't want to help themselves. And, you know, there are a few people right now who keep coming back to me who want to do one-on-one executive work. And yet I keep asking them, what is your why and what's your commitment? Because there are too many people who are suffering, who are so wanting to do something. And then there are others who believe that, well, this is something I can just dabble in. And it's not. It's self-defeating, because what happens is that we're actually fooling ourselves and tricking ourselves, as opposed to diving in and saying, yep, I'm ready, I'm going to be doing this. Because while it's simple to do, it's not simplistic in the way that we conceptualize, how do I actually move from being a really stressed person to actually, you know, getting some sort of stabilization and then creating a momentum of fulfillment as well as decreasing stress.
Well, it's kind of like being on a diet. It's like being on a diet or an exercise regime. You just can't do it every so often. You need to change your lifestyle and your habits and just to be a healthy person.
Right. It is a lifestyle change. Absolutely. So absolutely. Here's another thing though. If it's a lifestyle change, then what about the reinforcement around us? And I know I use the example of, like, you know, you have a couple. So you've got a couple, and one person, you know, they're both overweight. They both need to change their eating habits. They both need to change their, you know, exercise habits. And one person commits, you know, loses, you know, 230 pounds, and now they're into amateur bodybuilding. And the other person's still, you know, sitting on the couch and eating a lot of high processed foods and not doing anything. What do you think happens with that relationship?
Oh, it starts to go downhill, right? You know, because they're out of alignment.
Right. Absolutely. So if we're getting reinforcement of this is never going to work, or, you know what, you've tried this before and it never happened, or you're getting the reinforcement of negativity, or you're getting reinforcement of, you know, we only thrive in a high stress environment and everything is a priority. Eventually what happens is the person will say, I can't do this anymore, or the body will actually collapse itself. And that what happens in, you know, Seeley's work pointed this stuff out, which is, you know, we have heart attacks, strokes, high blood pressure, you know, all of these, you know, different maladies that will start manifesting physically in the body, as well as our emotional state and our mindset and our physical energy starts depleting. So things will get worse before they actually get better. The person needs to make the decision and the commitment that, yep, it stops now.
But
I start doing something different.
Do we know what the source of this is? I mean, because we can, okay, so we can solve our own habits and we can get ourselves healthier. But what are the sources of this? Because back in the 80s, or back, you know, it just wasn't that stressful. I mean, it's always been stressful in certain environments and things, but it's a different level now for so many people. So what do we know? Can we pinpoint some of the sources of this?
It's such a great question. But that is a question that comes up a lot. And it's really tough to actually pinpoint one source. But there are many sources of, we're seeing patterns, you know, of course, you know, patterns are, you know, the clusters of things that we see when we interview people and we ask people, you know, the why does this happen? Why? And we continue asking why until we get to, you know, a foundational level of where we can't ask the why anymore. There's no more answers to the why. And one of the biggest sources, and this is shocking to me, it's absolutely shocking, especially with the way that technology is today, you know, access of information, but our relationships and our ties to community are weaker than they've ever been.
Well, it's because we need people. We need that connection, I think.
Right. It goes back to, if you want to talk about source, links back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, of the sense of belonging. We have so much isolation right now. So much detachment in our community. I mean, we have meetup groups now just to establish community. There are, you know, play dates instead of just open up your door and run outside and go play. Our community ties are weaker. Our level of isolation is higher. And that in itself is a pinpoint of a source for stress.
Huh, interesting.
The other thing is, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, keep going on your other thing.
So the other thing is that as far as another identified source is our goal setting. We've become so competitive with others as opposed to competitive with ourselves. See, when we used to have pensions, the only person I had to compete with was me. I didn't have to compete with, you know, Bob, Sally, Frank, Amelia. It was just myself. And we had the support system. Families lived near one another. You know, it was one person worked and the other person, you know, stayed home and took care of the family unit. It's not like that anymore. We don't have those support systems. And at the same time, everyone's trying to do better at their career and trying to, you know, be competitive.
Well, there's
outside sources.
Isn't there a healthy level of competitiveness? And then there's the unhealthy, because there's a healthy competitiveness, you know, getting people to compete so that we're just better. But then there's the unhealthy, because you want to compete with, because you are who you are. So you want to compete with yourself to be the best you can be. But when you're having unhealthy competitiveness with your neighbors on things that are materially not important, then it becomes pretty unhealthy, right?
Right. So like with stress, so when people say to me things like, well, I just want all my stress to go away. Okay, well, if you want all your stress to go away, and we're speaking in absolute terms, then your heart's going to stop pumping blood and you're going to die. So we need some sort of stress. And at the same time, people need to have their awareness, a real awareness, as opposed to absolute. So all or nothing, black and white, good and bad. And we need to start changing our mindset from what works well for me and what doesn't work well for me. When we look at competition, it's the same way. Isn't some competition healthy? If we look at the people who are extremely successful in competitive environments, you know, the LeBron James, the Michael Jordans, I'm using sports figures as an analogy, because if you read anything about those folks, Richard Branson, Tony Robbins, you know, Oprah Winfrey, Madonna, they compete against one person, themselves, regardless of what everybody else is saying, regardless of what the news is saying, regardless of, you know, their neighbors saying, they compete with just one person, themselves, and it's intrinsic. When we start competing with external stuff, like, oh, my neighbor's got this new, you know, M3 BMW, or, oh, you know, this person, you know, she has a bigger diamond than I have, or, oh, look how skinny she is and I'm not. When we start looking externally at other people, we're really covering up stuff that we really need to deal with ourselves. I mean, one of the things that's a big challenge about doing this work, Sarah, is that when I'm helping people and coaching people with dealing with their stress, usually what people want to focus on is not really what the problem is. And sometimes people just aren't ready to focus on what they need to focus on. Sometimes people aren't willing to make the decision to keep the main thing the main thing, and to be determined to do those things.
Well, give me a couple examples, because I know you work with business executives all the time, and you have varying levels of acceptance, and sometimes it takes a while, and then they really dive in, and it becomes a beautiful thing. But give us some examples of some of this.
You know, for me, the ones that always stick out in my mind right away are the people of greatest resistance. I mean, they're the people that when you walk into a room, you know, whether they're saying, I'm being forced to do this, I have to do this, I've been told I have anger management, you know, anger issues, oh, I've been told I need to do this, you know, I have to be here. I mean, you know, to paint the picture, you know, it's the person who's got the awesome clothes on, drives the right car, you know, looks the part. And when I come in, they've got their arms folded. You know, they're too busy. They're too busy and too important to work on something like this, right? And they have to be there. And yet, the more that we get to know one another, I find that this work is really based on vulnerability, relationships, and transparency. So transparency, because I'm often asked, well, what do? You know, and I'm accountable
who are
to
you?
All the people that I work with. Right. Well, you know, it's more or less like, oh, so you're so perfect, right? You've got it all figured out. I'm going to wait for the opportunity for you to mess it up, because I'm going to point it out. And what I share with people is, because people will ask, what do? You know, well, what do? You're so, you've got this. No, I don't. You know what? I am just like you, but I'm different. I'm on a different path right now. Our pinpoint of our starting place is different, because I've been where they're at, which is very helpful. The other thing about vulnerability is when I can share with them real stories from either myself or other people, then again, it breaks down those barriers of, well, I'm not really sure that I have to listen to you. The other thing that happens too with the transparency component is once respect and the relationship starts being built, then the transparency of these little nuggets of, you know what, I really don't like this about myself, and I wish that I could change this. What happens is, and we'll just use anger management for the example, because it's the one that's coming up, the greatest resistance, is people will actually say, I really don't like this about myself. And I wouldn't tell that to everybody, but I'm saying it to you. And I want this to change. I just don't know how. And I have done stuff, but none of it's worked. So I'm really frustrated, and it increases my anger. And what wonderful thing that happens with people who are, I want to say, the highest resistors, of once they start seeing incremental changes, and we have a plan, we identify what our why is, we have a plan, daily incremental step, we're measuring. So again, because most of these folks, they want the data. If we're not measuring it and they can't link it back to something, then forget it. And that's where I find the work that I do to be different, is because I do measure. It's important to measure, so we, it's like stepping on a scale and knowing what my benchline, my benchmark weight is, and then I'm going through a whole transformation program. And not only do I know how I feel, but I can actually see my results. I have the concrete, numbers to support what I'm experiencing and what I'm feeling. And with these folks, it does become very illuminating when they have an experience, a change. And again, that change is different for everybody. So one person might say, if they're looking at someone else's experience and saying, well, that's nothing. I think that's small. But to that one person, it's huge. It's huge. And once they start stringing these little challenges, those little challenges amount to a big challenge and a big change. And they're like, you know what? I see this. I get it.
Okay, so question for you. Is anger management one of the biggest things that you see in executives or people that with a lot of responsibility, they're explosive because they can't control their stress?
Anger management is one. And then the other one is, I don't even know how to label this one yet, but it relates to ego. It is about self-serving and ego before making the right decision for the organization.
And is that stress-based?
Right, that
is really a stress-based reaction.
It does cause stress, yes. Because
no, but does it cause stress? But does that cause stress? Or is the ego issue, you know, where almost that narcissistic attitude, what's the chicken and the egg there? Does the stress cause the narcissistic or the ego issue? Or does the ego issue cause the stress?
Well, in organizations where it's coming out as the ego-based decision-making is rooted in self-worth, which is a perpetual stressor, actually, for people. It's a perpetual stressor for individuals. Yep. And then what happens is then it's like the sticky fingers.
Yeah, oh, exactly.
I'm now giving you sticky fingers, even though I don't want sticky fingers. I have to, maybe the other person who's getting the sticky fingers isn't, you know, ego-driven. However, they are what we call secondary, you know, experiencing secondary stress. So it's, you know, I don't have the same mindset that other person does, but I have to experience the stress because we're on the same team or because this person's my boss or because this person's my client.
Yeah.
Or this person is a vendor.
Okay. Well, so are there certain professions that are acutely affected by this more than others? Like four come to mind, like business executives, doctors, teachers nowadays, and veterans. I've done a lot of stories on veterans. I can imagine that those professions are just inundated with stress. I mean, is there certain professions that are acutely affected more than others, or are you seeing this across the board?
I'm seeing it across the board, and I wish that I could say that there were industries that were less affected by stress and that there are industries that are more immune or resilient to stress, but I'm not seeing that. And the other thing that I am seeing is that there are some researchers who want to silo, you know, well, this industry, you know, attorneys have it more, you know, orthopedic surgeons have it more, ER nurses and ER staff has it more, and, you know, preschool teachers have it less. Well, we need to come back
or how about yoga instructors?
As researchers, right, as researchers and practitioners, we know that perceived stress is a person's reality, regardless of what the data says. And for some reason, we always try to bucket stuff as again, researchers and practitioners. And what I'm saying is that this is across the board. No one's stress is more or less than someone else's, because what matters is that person's reality. And that's what I deal with. And that's what I help people understand. Because once again, there are so many different little nuggets of mindsets. Well, in awarenesses of mindsets, it's illumination. I can't tell you, Sarah, you know what just totally blows my mind sometimes is I can sit with a person and we can do our half hour initial evaluation and people are saying things to me like, my gosh, you know, you're just so wonderful. You've done so much for me already. And what I've said is I've sat here and I've listened to you. I've heard you, validated what you have shared. Because this is all true. This is all real. You know, whether it's been a male executive or a female executive or, you know, husband and wife, you know, parents, kids, to see people and to, you know, my gosh, I mean, to have people get emotional and say, I just wanted somebody to hear me, to say that, yeah, this is actually happening. This has happened. And then the other thing that I find very valuable is when we move from a mindset of this happened to me to this happened to happening. And once those three levels of transformation occur for a person, I'll tell you the changes that I've seen, the results that people have made for themselves is incredible. I mean, they're doing the work. I am proud and honored to be able to see and witness and experience with them these changes.
Now, are you seeing huge results then, going through the industry or going through the company, the business? Is it penetrating out?
It's a person. Yes. And what's really super fantastic about when I'm working in an organization to see, and when I say see, this is stuff that either is being reported back to me or I'm actually seeing with my own eyes, right? So the differences of relationships, for example, the changes within relationships. And what the cool thing about it is the changes that I'm seeing and that I'm witnessing in organizations go back to this one, data point that we have about our relationships and community ties are weaker. When people start doing this stuff, the community within an organization and the relationships within an organization become stronger.
Is it also just more accepting of others too? You're kinder, you're more accepting. When your stress level goes down, you judge people less, you're less angry, you're less ego focused.
So the work on looking at acceptance and kindness with the work that I do, I'm not focused on acceptance and kindness and tolerance. That's more of mindful meditation. And some of that's really good. Some of that really helps out in certain organizations that are, less. Every organization is results oriented. However, there are some organizations where their focus is a little bit more different than I would say a more data-driven organization.
But don't you think just by lowering your stress, it automatically does that? Because you're just not ready to pounce on people, and you're not ready to. So you're just a little more patient. Give it a little more time to figure it out. Because I'm a very data-oriented person too. I tend to be more on the side of let's get things done. I don't necessarily like some of the, wishy-washy stuff that I don't know. I wouldn't want to call it that. You have a much better way of saying it. But I think that just not when I get stressed, I can get angry easier, much easier. And I think just reducing that stress level for me allows me to be kinder, more patient, more tolerant of other people's ideas. And it ends up being more productive instead of me just being military, like a military dictator because I'm stressed and we just need to get things done. It allows me to slow down and accept other things, and things work so much better.
So where this work does come in with the style that I use is the awareness component. So it's not that because my stress is reduced, then I'm not, blown off the handle and judging others, or I'm not as kind, or I'm not as open to other people's ideas. What happens is that when we work on ourselves, our awareness of why I'm doing what I'm doing and how am I doing, and again, all of these other different measurements that we use to increase and sustain the awareness, it means then I respond differently. So I'm still a data-oriented individual. I'm also more aware of who I am, who I was, who I aspire to be, and how am I getting there. I'm also aware of when I feel and I know, and I'm aware of my stress level is getting to a point where I need to use one of my techniques so that way I don't revert back into old patterns and old habits.
Well, now let's talk about medication. Does medication sometimes, is it needed to deal with the stress, or can you use methods like this to deal with it without medication?
That's a great question. It's a question that also comes up a lot. I'm not a medical doctor, so I can't speak to, yes, use it, no, use it. Because I've actually had people say to me, my GP or, my psychiatrist wants to put me, I actually had an orthopedic surgeon ask me this question, which is really interesting because he could have written out his own prescription. And so what he wanted to know specifically for me was, what are you using and what are you recommending that is non-invasive? So basically it's something that you're not ingesting or digesting that is pharmaceutical based. And like anything, I find that, medications you know, from what people have shared with me, do work. There are clients that I have where they've said, you know what, I'm on this particular medication. I've mentioned to my doctor that we're going to go ahead and do this. And what's interesting is I've had more people who are either off the medication and who keep their prescription handy because it's like a safety blanket for them. If I need it, I have it here, but I'm doing these things and they work well for me because the side effects are something that's concerning to people. In as much, I had a psych nurse talk with me about the different tests that were available to determine which type of medications that people can take. And what I'm finding also is that people who are taking medication will say, you know what, I'm taking this stuff. I'm having a lot of side effects from it. And you know what, it doesn't help me. It's not working for me. So there are so many different variables of looking at this. The one thing that I would and I do encourage people to look at are what can you do right now that you know works that is non-invasive. So that is not prescription-based. Like for myself, I have never taken any type of medication for PTSD or for stress. I've done everything what I call natural. And that's the way that I wanted to do it for myself because of the side effects, because of the long-term effects, because of the dependencies, and also because I know how my body reacts to medication. And so I knew that there, you know, it's not just one way of making a chocolate chip cookie. This is where, again, this awareness, the illumination is when people share with me their story and they say, oh, no, I've got to take this. Oh, so-and-so said I have to do this. And I'll ask them, what's your favorite chocolate chip cookie? Tell me what it's like. And everybody has a different one, by the way. Some people are like, ooh, I like mine thin. It's got to be thin and crispy. Other people have shared like, oh, no, I like more of a cake one. I mean, I've even had people share with me. I mean, it's like all kinds of different chocolate chip types of cookies, right? And then you ask them the question, is yours the right one? Yep. This is the best in the world, right? And how many different recipes are there for making chocolate chip cookies? Hundreds of thousands, right? Our bodies are different. Our physiological bodies, the way that we respond to stuff is different, whether we're talking about the sunshine or we're talking about medication or you're talking about, you know, do you like grapefruit versus oranges? You know, we're looking at citrus. Our bodies respond differently. So what we do is we find out what works. I mean, right now I'm doing a mindful eating workshop right now. It's online. We're measuring four different things. It's the four pillars of stress. It's those four principles. And it's amazing to hear people's results right now on weight loss just based on this mindful eating program that measures four different things. That's it.
What does it measure?
Four things. So it measures when there's different times, like for example, before, like right when you're eating and then a period of time after you eat and then right before you're getting ready to eat your next meal.
So just being mindful of what you're doing?
Yes and no. So mindful eating is again defined differently for a lot of people. And mindful eating with mindful effect, it's more than, okay, I have this, you know, wonderful, you know, cup of pho or a bowl of pho in front of me and it smells wonderful. And oh, I'm putting it in my mouth and I can feel it going down my throat. For some people, that's what mindful eating is about. For me, again, I'm measuring, I'm looking at results. Okay. I'm looking at how does what I just ate and what I'm eating affect my physical body? How does it affect my mindset? How does it affect my emotions? And how is it affecting my energy levels? And so when people go through my mindful eating course, they get an entire workbook on, okay, for the next 6 weeks, you have all your tools. We're going to create your menu. Everything's all set to go. You're just measuring these four things. And then we're adjusting. If someone says, you know what, I had this and I felt terrible afterward. I had a headache. I had a stomach ache. My energy was really super low. I found that I was really super cranky and irritable and I don't know why. And my emotions were like, oh my gosh, I was ready to grab Kleenex. All right, then we're going to adjust. What did we eat? What were the carbs, the proteins, the fruit, and the vegetable? What is it? That's it. It's super simple. And yet people are just blown away at how easy it is and the results that they're getting because of it. And there's no like, oh, weigh in measurements and all this other stuff. It is literally just based on those four principles.
Trying to figure out what foods your body wants and how it reacts properly or not properly with it. If you can't digest meat very well, then don't eat the meat or certain types of meats you can't digest, you don't want to be eating those. Or, you know, some people can't eat apples, or there are certain fruits you can't eat. So that's what you're looking at. I didn't even know Mindful went as far as to think about food going down your throat and stuff like that. I didn't even know it goes out there.
I mean,
so to me, what you're doing is mindful.
There's some real fun stuff. I mean, Jon Kabat-Zinn, you know, he's the famous one with eating this raisin. You know, you take the little raisin, you're looking at it, it's in your hand, you're using your senses of sight. Then you put it in your mouth and you're holding it still. And that's more of a meditation exercise of eating. And again, you know, one of the cool things that you just said too was about the meat, right? So if I'm eating meat, how do I adjust which meat I'm eating? So what I found is that people have said things like, I can't eat chicken. Oh my gosh. I just cannot eat any poultry at all. But boy, they can eat beef.
Because their body's not responding properly. Like they might not, they're in the bathroom a lot more or whatever.
You know, some people have said if they eat beef that they feel like they have something so heavy in their stomach that they just feel terrible. And then they have brain fog. They can't focus at work because they had the hamburger, you know, without the bread. I mean, people are really, when they get into this, I mean, they're coming back with feedback that is just like, okay, look, I know I can eat this. And I feel like, yep, I'm ready to do a marathon. My mind is so clear. I'm focused. I've got high energy. I'm feeling good about myself. My self-talk is positive. But boy, if I eat something else, and they've identified what those things are. You know what? Can't do it. Cannot absolutely do it. I'm sluggish. I want to go take a nap. I'm cranky. I don't want anybody talking to me.
Well, and this is what you try to teach athletes.
I don't even want to listen to myself.
Well, this is what you're trying to teach athletes, right? Because, you know, I've coached for about 15 years, and you try to teach the players, the athletes, well, how are you responding? What are you eating before you participate or before that game? What makes you feel better and more alert when you're playing? And it's the same thing for performing on anything, right? So if you're eating fruit that really makes you alert and play better versus, I remember anytime I had like sausage or it was terrible, I am not someone that should be eating that stuff. And so it really is, you need to understand your body so that you can perform. And I think that's like, athletes really need it because it can make the difference between winning or not winning or, you know, getting those extra goals or whatever you're doing.
It's about optimization in those four areas. And the other thing is if you take it off the field, right? So we take it. I mean, this is what the Seattle Seahawks did. You know, the beauty of this stuff is everybody knows what they need to do. And we need systems to help people. So like, for example, you know, when people will say, well, you know, you need to lose 10 pounds. Okay. You need to have menu planning. Okay. Can you give me some examples? So I don't have to invent the wheel or sit down and take time to do this because sometimes what happens is that people get deer in the headlights. It's like, okay, where do I start? And when you have a place where you can get these tools, and then, first thing we do, you know, after the intake is we always just, it's like we're doing planning right away. We don't do anything until we get the plan done. Once the plan's done, then guess what? We're good to go. It's about optimization in those four levels. Now, if you can imagine people at work, working at their optimal performance with their body, their mind, their emotion, and their energy. Have you ever been around someone and you're like, oh my gosh, I just want to hang out with that person?
Oh yeah. The energy level is really high. And sometimes you can feel it with yourself when you're like that, like, oh wow, I'm really feeling great. I haven't felt like this, you know? So it's I agree. There's really a difference.
And then what happens with this optimization is it links back again to the status and quality of our relationships, whether it's at work, at the home, at church, in our communities. I mean, all of these places get affected when we start doing this. I said to someone the other day, they were complaining, and I, you know, I mean, it was, Oh my gosh, it was a half hour, and I was just thinking, oh my gosh, okay, I've got to turn this around, because I started feeling, and I was giggling a little bit to myself, and I said, all right, here you are, you're in your own environment, what are you going to do with this one, right? Because my energy was getting depleted, I was getting really, I was starting to feel like I just wanted to take a nap, and I'm thinking to myself, all right, well, it's happening to you, so what are you going to do? You're going to buck up and use what, you know, because people expect me to use what I, people expect me to do the things that I'm asking them to do. And I also have the same expectation for myself. So when it happens, and I'm in that situation, sometimes I can't help but giggle. Like, I don't giggle out loud, but I'm like giggling to myself thinking, all right, well, here it is. You know, what are you going to do? You're going to buck up and use it? Of course you are. And so it was interesting with this person was I said, all right, so now all you shared all this stuff with me, which I greatly appreciate. I hear what you're saying. I see all these challenges. And I said, so you want change, right? So how are you going to be the change? And the guy just looked at me and I thought, I'm not saying a word. You need to talk next. How are you going to be the change? If you want change, then you need to be the change. Can't expect everybody else to change and then you'll change. And I didn't. I didn't say anything. And he just, it was like, I felt like it was a stare down contest, you know? And I'm sitting there and I kept thinking, I'm not saying a word. I am not saying a word. You need to say something to me and then we can talk about this. And it was like a sitting with a six-year-old kid doing a stare down. And finally he said, well, isn't that something? Isn't that something? And he said, you've been telling me all these weeks that it's an inside job. It's an inside job. It's an inside job. And he said, and then he sighed. And then he said, I guess I got to be the one, you know, to make the first step. And I said, that's right. You got to be the first one to make the step. That's what we're working on right now.
That's excellent. But that's excellent though, because that's, if you want change, you have to be the change that you want to see. Now, once you start changing and you're that way, now it becomes, now it's a different level of a problem, but you're not going to make the change if you can't do it yourself.
Right. And, you know, the other thing about this one, too, I want to note is that we're working on a different time zone. So this is someone in Australia. So, I mean, we're talking, it's you know, I mean, it's different time. So I know that the time does affect, you know, both me and this person when we're talking. And yes. You know, half an hour, and I'm like, okay, you know, you got it out. I get it. Some people like to journal. Other, you know, they're more internal processors. Other people are external, which I find most of the people that I work with are external processors. So I get these phone calls, you know, like they'll call me, hey, I just want to let you know, oh, I had a breakthrough today. And it's like, you know, 30-second phone call just to tell me about their breakthrough. Okay, got to go. You know, I hope your day's great. You know, it's like, thanks. Okay, good. You know, and then we'll have these really, and then we'll have these occasional 30-minute, 15 minutes, 20 minutes where I'm like, okay, I'm listening, you know, yep, doing, you know, the listening. And then it's okay, well, you want all this stuff to change. Okay, so what are you gonna do about it? How are you gonna be the change? You know, and again, it sometimes it comes out to be, this is a, you know, doing Skype scare, you know, contest. I'm thinking, I can't tell you the answer. You have to have the Descartes moment yourself. One thing that I will say for people who are listening about, well, you know, I want to do something, but I'm not sure, or, you know, can you just tell me the answer? What I find is that when people are given tools and they are building their own plan, and, you know, of course, they're co-creating it, the success rate just skyrockets. Where the success rate does not skyrocket is if a person tells another person what they think they need. People know what they need. I think sometimes people are hesitant because what I found is there's this, you know, fear factor. Well, if I expose this with myself, you know, and it doesn't happen so much with me. What I am finding too is that people will work with other people and then they'll call me because they'll say, well, someone said that they know you. This happened a few weeks ago too. I had to diffuse a situation between two executives. I did it as a favor to someone who I know. And it was, you know, two people who just weren't listening to each other. And this is where the ego came in. My ego is bigger than yours, or I'm going to try to overpower you. And, you know, I call it diffusing the situation, where I'm listening to what people are saying and then helping identify, you know, what is important to each person and help the other person hear the other person's importance and then validate that. And how can we move through this situation as opposed to this ping ponging back and forth of, you know, the battle of the egos, which then amplifies stress. And more importantly, what happens is it affects the team. It affects the groups of people who are trying to work together and, you know, do good stuff.
Yeah, it affects everybody around them. But, okay, so we don't have that much time left. So I want to ask you kind of a big picture question and then close this thing up. What do you see as the consequences for the United States if we don't start managing some of these underlying causes and the symptoms of this? Of just stress and how it's affecting families and businesses.
You know, I want to end our conversation on a positive note, but I have to say something that is going to be hard for some people to hear, because it is hard also for me to just know that things will not get better. They're going to get worse before they get better. And what worse looks like is different for everybody. Now, on a positive, what I want people to take away is that with every obstacle, with every challenge, with every sticky situation, there's a value in it. And believe me, when I work with people, and myself included, because I do this and I still do this and I've done this for myself, it's hard sometimes to see the value in the unthinkable. It really is. Every time, though, there is a value component of it. The other thing I want people, if I could say what I'd like for people to take away, is don't wait for things to get so bad that you're forced to make a decision. I've seen that too many times. I experienced that early in my life, before I was 20. You know, too early to see people you love and you care get to a point in their life where you couldn't make a change anymore. Medically, you could not change anymore. So death comes early, unfortunately. Don't wait for things to get so bad that you're forced to make a change. Do it now. The cool thing is, when people have that awareness, Sarah, of, you know what, I don't want that to happen to me. Everybody knows somebody who knows somebody that they've waited and it was too late. It was too late. Everybody knows somebody. And when people have that awareness and it wakes people up and they say, you know what, not anymore. These are the stories when you hear people say, you know what, I quit drinking. I haven't touched a drop. I quit smoking cold turkey. You know what, I stopped eating processed foods. And you know what, that's it. I started cooking. It's those people who make decisive decisions. Yep, that's it. And they say, you know what, no, I'm not waiting any longer. I have time. I can live a better life. I can do these things because they can, because I see it.
They got to empower themselves to do it. So where can people learn more about you? Because this is great stuff.
You know, they can go to my website, which is themindfuleffect.com. I know that, you know, I have a book that I co-authored with Brian Tracy that's called The Success Blueprint. They can order the book. If they order the book from Amazon, it's a regular version of the book. But if they order the book from my website, it's actually a special edition and it's autographed. So, you know, usually people will send me a little note about, you know, who they are and what they're trying to do. And then I do. I personalize a note for each person who orders a book. I know that the U.S. Postal Service is really happy when I come in there and I have, yes, books to deliver. But I think it makes a difference for people because, again, it's establishing that relationship. People can also look at my social media, whether it's on Twitter or LinkedIn, or we have a Facebook page, and then also Instagram. So there's many different ways that people can find out who I am and how to work with me or more about just pieces of valuable information that they can take and use today.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Deborah, for joining us today. This is very insightful.
Oh my gosh, Sarah, thanks for having me again. I really appreciate it. I think that just the work that you're doing right now with, you know, the radio and then also at schools, I mean, you're really capturing different audiences and helping build that consciousness and the awareness components, which is wonderful for both kids and adults alike.
Thank you. I really enjoy it. So I'm trying to do something good.
Absolutely.
So that's the end of the interview with Dr. Deborah Lind. And I just want to remind you that I have over 130 other episodes and articles on my website at sarahwestall.com. I also have an online store that I'm testing. It's just a little mug right now that we're selling for $10 to help support the show. Want to see if there's any kinks and problems. And then we're going to start selling some other things because we don't bring in a lot of extra income. So we want to support the show through selling things. And hopefully our listeners will support and maybe get something that you can use. And it can be a win-win. And I want to remind you also that I air now 4 days a week. Actually, every day of the week, depending on where you look. But on the Global Star National Satellite, I'm airing Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And also Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And then over 90 different digital channels streaming and in podcasts. I also, my YouTube channel is starting to take off, so you can find me there as well. But of course, at sarahwestall.com, where all the articles and podcasts and YouTube videos are there as well. So for now, I hope everybody has an amazing day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. As Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. And learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.